It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Matinee Talk. I am your host, Julian, and with me, as always,
Johnny Lightfoot.
How are you doing today, Johnny?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I don't know. We're going to talk about this later. I literally was okay. Then, watched Greta. Confused about some things. Went to sleep thinking about it. And then I just got mad thinking about it some more. So we're going to talk about why I feel that way in a moment. But other than that, I'm fine. I'm tired of the cold. I'm ready for spring to come. Like, it was 30 degrees last night, and it's almost 40 degrees to this morning. Just ready to go. Ready for this cold to go. But besides me complaining about the cold yet again on Matinee Talk, we'll talk about some numbers, and then we'll talk about our summary of the Oscars and a review of Greta. So, without further ado, Johnny, what were the numbers this past weekend?
All right, so this weekend at the box office, number one in its second week in release, still on top of the box office, How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, bringing in a $30 million haul, bringing domestic up to $97.6 million. Number two, Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral, bringing in $27 million.
Ain't it this opening weekend?
Yeah. I don't get it. How these movies keep making money. The same things over and over.
Over.
And over.
Over again. Yeah.
Number three, Alita Battle Angel, bringing in another $7 million, so big drop there. Brings its domestic total to $72.4 million. However, overseas it's already made $278 million, so it's made almost 80% of its money overseas, which
that's
is
not bad.
Not bad at all. Number four, Lego Movie 2, the second part, bringing in $6.6 million, bringing its domestic total to $91 million. And rounding out the top five, Fighting With My Family, bringing in $4.6 million, bringing its domestic total to $14 million. So it's already made its money. It's only open domestically so far. Its budget was only $11 million. So it's doing all right.
It's doing all right.
But let's get into some news. Julian, our first news revolves around a pretty big star.
So, yes, Will Smith is in talks. It's not finalized yet, but he's in talks to be Serena's and Venus's tennis coach in like a biopic film of King Richard. Nothing else has been notified yet about it. The only thing we kind of know about it is that they're trying to make a film about like the King Richard spec with has basically hardship and all that about tennis and about Richard Williams. He was 78 page plan with his professional tennis careers, like everything that went on during like his years of like playing tennis, I guess. And I don't know too much about it. They really haven't said anything about the script. All we know is mostly Venus and Serena's tennis coach, aka their father, has coached them since the beginning, basically talking about how phenomenal they have played. I don't know if I see him playing another.
I mean, to be honest,
actor like
after his last few roles, I wouldn't be mad about him getting back into
the drama aspect.
Drama aspect, something that could get him some awards consideration, which I think that's what this is aiming to be. So, I mean,
my thing is this will be his third or fourth role he's portraying somebody else.
You had Concussion.
Yeah, Ali, Concussion, and Pursuit of Happiness. I was right. So, yeah, this is going to be his fourth one. So, it's just like, so you're going to just be doing like how I felt about Chadwick Boseman. You're just going to be portraying almost everybody now. So, what's up with that? I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It'll be interesting because it's going to say, hey, Will Smith still got those acting chops. Mm-hmm. Even though he's been making terrible movies lately, he can still make some acting. He has acting chops. I I don't know. I need to know more about the script, what they're trying to do with King Richard, per se, besides just, hey, going over the span of his, like, covering Tana's career. I want to know more about that.
Mm-hmm.
Just see where that's going, and then why there's nobody else been attached to it. So it'll be interesting to see where it foregoes after this. But besides that, we got some news about Steven Spielberg and Netflix. Johnny, if you want to talk about that.
So for anybody who knows, Steven Spielberg has been open about his feelings on Netflix films being able to be eligible for Oscar consideration. And this goes back to before Roma took home some awards this past weekend. And so he's come out and said that during the next Academy meetings, he's going to voice his concerns about Netflix being able to be, up for Oscar consideration. And his argument is that Netflix hurts theatrical distribution, and it's Netflix is one of the reasons people don't go to the movies anymore. And then so Netflix recently finally took to Twitter to respond to what Spielberg has been going on for a while. And Netflix basically came out, and this was their Twitter response. "We love cinema. Here are some things we also love. Access for people who can't always afford or live in towns without theaters. Letting everyone, everywhere, enjoy releases at the same time. Giving filmmakers more ways to share art. These things are not mutually exclusive." And I can't deny with Netflix's talk.
And I agree with that. I wholeheartedly agree with that. No offense to Mr. Spielberg or to other filmmakers who feel how he feels about the perspective of basically they're knocking out the theatrical distribution of it. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think at this point, in terms of our entertainment watching per se, a lot of people like the idea of just waiting for things to come out on streaming and things like that, because to be honest, I've had this conversation with a lot of my films friends who don't watch movies like they used to anymore. Biggest problem now, and I could say it's kind of my issue too, is just ticket prices. Ticket prices when we were growing up were $5. $5 or $6. Now it jumped up to $16-$17 for you to go just watch a standard 2D movie. I don't think that's still an issue because, I mean, we had the highest grossing animated feature ever last year with Incredibles 2. We've had, Ready Player One wasn't a huge success, but it was still a standard success nonetheless.
Infinity War made a ton of money.
Right. And it's like, I don't believe that people are still not going to go see movies. Granted, there's going to be some of those middle movies that are not going to make it. Mm-hmm. That's not going to make the theatrical distribution. So, like, again, I'm sorry to say, Steven, but, like, Ready Player One, I think Alita is going to go in that top thing. But, like, for instance, your Marvel movies are still going to make its racks. Star Wars movies are still going to make its money. Like, I think that the theatrical experience is still there. I just don't agree that Netflix is killing the theatrical experience for people.
No, I agree. It's not Netflix's fault, per se. But I do feel like I don't think it's necessarily the money thing. To be honest.
You think so?
No, because, and I spoke about it a little bit when we had our Alita talk, when I would tell people, like, go see this in the theater. Not the greatest story. Some of the acting is iffy, but it's a film that deserves to be watched in a theater.
Correct.
With a movie like Roma, outside of some of the sound editing and things of that nature, that's really the only thing that when I did sit down and watch it at home, granted, it was one of those films where I put my phone on silent, set it to the side. You know, I didn't want any distractions, nothing. I feel like it could have benefited a little bit from a theatrical experience. When I watched the new Peter Jackson documentary, They Shall Not Grow Old, after being in that in the theater, and that was one of those spur of the moment, I just want to go watch a movie type things. It wasn't one that I was like, I need to see this in theater. But after watching it in the theater, I was like, huh, that was a really cool experience that I wouldn't have gotten watching that at home.
Yeah.
On the same token, I also think places like Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, giving filmmakers more opportunity. So you're mm-hmm. giving the audience more opportunity to, you know, not have to spend the money. Or, you know, I mean, with us, it's no big deal. I mean, we're single adult males, but I could understand, like, a family of five or six. Like, that's expensive. That's when I start feeling, like, the money thing.
Yeah, okay.
But when I talk to other, like, single people and they're like, oh, man, it's too pricey. I'm like, dude, you just spent, like, $15 at McDonald's. You could have gone to a matinee and got popcorn and a drink, whatever. So, like, I understand. I feel for families because I know that, like, you talk about a family of five and you talk about every, you know, drinks, popcorn, whatever. You know, that's $100 plus just to go, you know, watch an hour and a half to 2 hour movie. I feel that. But I feel for more on the filmmaker side where nowadays if your movie isn't like a big Marvel movie or a Star Wars movie or like an epic, it needs to be either that or it needs to be something that could possibly be like an art house gem.
Yeah.
You know, that costs less than $15 million. And you'll get, you know, you might get a wide release for like 2 weeks to a month, maybe. And then you have your horror movies, your Blumhouse, which are made for less than $10 million and always make a ton of money. So if you're not in that grouping, then it's hard to get distribution. And so if somebody like a Netflix or Prime comes to you and is like, hey, I'll buy your movie off you for like $20 million, you probably take that. Because you wouldn't make that in the theater.
Right. And that's why I'm like, not as...
And your art is going to be seen.
Right. And you're going to be seen. You're going to be noticed. And it's on... I forgot how many subscribers Netflix has. But it gives you that platform that most other people can't. Right? Mm-hmm. We're in an age where almost you can find any film almost on any streaming device. Right? And I feel like for... this particular time of film, like filmmakers' lives right now and filmmakers' careers, there's so many ways you can get access to that. Because back in the day, if your film wasn't in theaters, it was kind of like most people
weren't going to see it. You needed to hope that some 12-year-old saw it on the shelf at the DVD at the exactly. movie store.
And that's how it was, and that's why we had so many cult classics. Whereas now, I feel like we're at the time of technology.
It's also free marketing because Netflix right. always puts the like recommended. You didn't see a poster. You didn't see any of that. You're just
oh, I've never seen this film before. Okay. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's a easier access for filmmakers who are trying to get their name in the ring and say, hey, watch my film. This is what I do. Things like that. So I don't see that as a big issue. Like, for instance, one of the best films of last year was Roma. And I don't understand. I kind of don't feel like Steven Spielberg puts that into question. Like, yes, Netflix makes a lot of duds. A whole lot of duds. Mm-hmm. But there's sometimes like Beast with No Nation, Roma. There's another two films I've seen.
Mud. 2 years ago.
Huh?
2 years ago.
That's what I'm saying. I'm going to remember when we get off the podcast. But it's like that where you're going to be sitting here wondering, wow, these are some phenomenal films. Oh, and The Irishman that's coming out later mm-hmm. this year from Martin Scorsese. That's going to be getting Oscar buzz as soon as it comes out. So I'm
Ballad of Buster Scruggs got some nominations.
There we go. Another one. The Coen Brothers. And so I'm just kind of like, you got to understand that these are new ways for us to watch films. And to be honest with you, I think it's smart for certain films. Like a Ballad of Buster Scruggs. I don't think anybody would have watched that in the theaters. No offense. I love the Coen Brothers.
I mean, with both that and Roma, like when you think about the premise for each of those films. So you have a black and white film with subtitles, no known actors. Not a, like, epic score, nothing. Mm-hmm. And then you have this kind of, like, patched together little vignette stories.
Yeah.
Taking place in Western times where you've got a few stars in there, but they're just these little short stories. Like, you're not going to spend a ton of money marketing either of those.
No.
And the studios know that. So, of course, they sell it to Netflix. That way they at least make a little bit of money. They get the movie out there for people to see, get recognized, and then... they both get Oscar nominations.
Right. And that's why at this point I don't agree with Steven. And I just want him to understand that, hey, let's be honest, most of the films that are Oscar nods aren't really box office films or, you know, movies that make big money. The only four movies that were nominated for Oscars, which we'll get to in a moment, were box office, like, blockbusters. Not blockbusters, but made some pretty big money during the Oscars. So, like, Black Panther, A Star Is Born. I know I'm missing a few. But, yeah, it's just, I don't agree with it, but I'm not gonna get in my soapbox. If there are any final thoughts you have, Johnny, we can go from there.
No, not on that. I did want to say there was one other thing that I missed, not regarding this topic, but we had two trailers drop in the last 24 hours.
Which trailers?
So we had the, I want to say, probably final Shazam trailer.
Oh, yeah.
And then this morning, less than an hour ago, we had Ari Aster's new trailer for Midsommar, which wasn't in my top 10 most anticipated, but it is in my top 20. But they just dropped the first, A24 just dropped the first trailer for Midsommar.
I haven't seen Midsommar trailer yet. What did you think of it so far?
I mean, it looks like an Aster film. It's creepy as hell. You, from the, I think it's only like a minute and a half. You have no idea what the plot is.
Okay.
It's just eerie, as opposed to Hereditary, which was mostly in the dark. This, the entire trailer, I want to say, was entirely in sunlight, which was different. So, but it looks interesting. It looks really beautiful. But yeah, and then the Shazam one, it looks fine.
I mean, with the Shazam trailer, I will say I'm kind of not excited. I'm just,
I do like that they, after the first one, then they're like, now they're really gearing towards the, like, it's a kid with superheroes, and he's doing what a kid would do.
And that's what Shazam's supposed to be, so that's why the first trailer was like, okay, I mean, I get your idea, but I wanted to see the more of the kid aspect, and then this trailer, I got more of it, so I was like, okay, all right, I'm not as worried as I once was about it. I think it's going to make a little splash, but either that. Speaking of which, before we go into Oscars, sorry, we're going on tangents. What do you think about DCEU now focusing on solo projects and not more on the extended universe aspect of it?
I think it's smart. I think it's what they should have done to begin with. After Man of Steel, I would have done Man of Steel, then a Batman movie, Man of Steel 2, a Wonder Woman movie, you know.
Then Justice League.
Wonder Woman 2, and then, like, then do a Justice League. But again, they wanted to rush to try to catch up with Marvel. And
I think what's going to happen now is, because they have so many movies coming out, it's going to be weird now that they're like, okay, these kind of aren't in the DCEU anymore. They're going to slowly but surely try to pull themselves out of the DCEU.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, like I said, I think personally you should hit the reset button, come back at this maybe 10, 15 years from now, and then do it all over again like you were supposed to. I think that's what I would have done.
Yeah. I mean, with the success of Wonder Woman and Aquaman, I didn't think they would do that unless I really felt like if Aquaman bombed, then that was
then
it.
Then you would hit the reset button.
But with Aquaman doing well and Shazam having somewhat favorable numbers, I think it's got a good shot to do well, and then we'll see where they go from there.
Okay.
So I mean, We'll see.
We will see. But other than that, now we're going to be talking about the Oscars. Yes, we know it was about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. But we haven't got a chance to talk about it. Of course, I watched it. I watched the entire thing, unfortunately. Actually, this year wasn't that bad.
It wasn't, because I was expecting it to be
A hot mess.
But it was fine. It moved really quickly, which I liked.
I was going to say, they really didn't need a host this year. I enjoyed that about this one. I will say that, like, they didn't need a host. It was really cool. It flowed very well. There were some highlights, like Brian Tyree Henry and Melissa McCarthy, Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph, and
The opening Tina Fey. I saw a lot of people saying, like, why didn't y'all just have the three of them host?
That would have been amazing. I would have sat there and watched it the entire time. And there was a few tidbits here and there, like Awkwafina and John Mulaney also. But other than that, yeah, it went well. The only thing is, the Oscars pulled the Oscars yet again, where it was like, okay, some of these awards make sense. Others, what the hell was this coming from? So without further ado, Johnny, let's start with you. What were your biggest snubs, your biggest wins, or biggest takeaways?
So I will say, for me, the biggest snub was best sound editing.
Yes.
Because in my mind, First Man, like if I felt like if First Man was going to win one, it was going to be best sound editing. And granted, they did come back with, and I'll talk about it later when we go over our surprises, you know, redeem themselves a little bit. But First Man has some of the best sound editing I've heard ever, and they gave it to Bohemian Rhapsody, which in my mind is a glorified music video.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. And I'm going to put it this way. I had sound editing. If you follow me on Twitter, you saw my sound editing went to, I think, Roma or what was the other film I put? I forgot. What
Quiet Place?
Huh? Oh, yeah, Quiet Place. And so I put it there, and then Johnny bought the 4K version, and we demoed it at our job, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
First Man definitely should have won for sound editing, but it was too late. I was like, I'm
going to keep my other thing with sound editing. I want to know how many of the voters saw First Man on a DVD screener.
Probably a lot. Quite a lot. I'm going to guarantee you that.
Because if you saw either of those films on a DVD screener, on a TV or a tablet or something, I'll tell you, you should not be allowed to vote for that.
No, specifically, and that's what we're going to talk about in a moment. That was one of my biggest things about that. My biggest thing is like special effects, which nothing's wrong with First Man winning. My biggest thing is with special effects, sound design, sound mixing, and score. We shouldn't be listening to it on an iPod. Should not be listening to it on like.
You shouldn't be watching it on a cell phone or a tablet or a laptop.
Experience it in a movie theater. Like go experience all of that in a movie theater or
at least a decent media decent room. Media like room. A screening room.
Like I just watching Bohemian Rhapsody in theaters, the only thing that was great about it, no offense to you, Bohemian Rhapsody, well no, complete offense now, is the fact that the Live Aid performance is probably the only part of that film that did some really very, very well done sound editing. And then for you to win editing, which really was just like a head scratcher. Why?
Well, because you essentially a big portion of the movie is them playing Queen tracks while montages are happening.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, your sound editing, you literally just took a clip from a track and just laid it over video. You didn't actually like piece together and edit, because the way First Man is the sound editing in that, where it stops on a dime, you're hearing sound here, click, 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 like it is phenomenal.
And that's why I was confused about that. And then Bohemian Rhapsody winning editing, like, what? Did we not see the scene where Queen is finally meeting their agent and how, like, this editing is so choppy? Or when, I think when he's coming in the rain and he's going to talk to his, like, his friend slash ex-lover, and he's like sitting there trying to talk to her in the rain and things like that. The editing was so choppy. Like, I'm sitting here like, who edited this film? Because this is so terrible. The only part of that was edited very well was the Live Aid performance. And you're literally telling me for 10 minutes of the movie, that's why I won an Oscar? Ridiculous. And then my biggest snub was Roma not winning Best Picture.
Yeah, I think a big portion of the voting body probably knew that it was going to win Best Foreign, and they were like, no, we're not going to let it win both.
You should have let it both. Like I was saying on Twitter, hey, you could have let Black Panther win. I'd have been like, huge surprise, didn't understand. I wouldn't have understood it, but I was like, okay, fine. You would have had Black Klansman win. I'd be like, oh, wow, y'all finally gave Spike Lee a movie. Cool. I would have been happy if you gave Star Is Born a favorite one. But I hate to say it. Driving Miss Daisy Part 2. Really? Driving Miss Daisy Part 2 won Best Picture. Cool. Makes complete sense. Cool. And then
biggest surprise. Olivia, did you have any more snubs?
No.
No?
Those are my only biggest gripes of this year.
My biggest surprise was Olivia Colman. Yep. For Best Actress for The Favorite.
I thought it was going to go to Glenn Close for The Wife.
So did everybody. Anybody in any Oscar pool was like, oh, this is a lock.
And she...
It got shocked. And it shocked, and it shocked her, too, because she arguably had the best speech of the night as well.
Literally.
It was hilarious.
It was hilarious. She was like, you should be up here, Glenn. I don't understand. You're my peer. You're my admirer. And she's like, oh. And then she started talking about her kids, how they should be excited, but you should be in bed. And yeah, she was just...
And then she was like... Lady Gaga, and yeah. Randomly she was just like,
it's like, oh, timers, come on, some music. I was like, yeah, salute.
And what's crazy is I read something to where initially the producers of the movie knew that if they pushed her for best supporting, she would probably like win that easily.
Yeah.
And so they were like, well, let's try to get as many nominations as possible. So they were like, we'll push her for lead, and then we'll push the two of them for supporting. And they were like, well, that'll get us more nominations. That'll
give you more nominations, yeah.
But then nobody expected her to win.
I'm surprised that she won, and I'm happy for her. Scary part is, again, only seeing bits and pieces of The Favorite, haven't fully finished it. But what I've saw, Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz, and Olivia Colman pulled all the stops, and I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it. Mahershala won. Wasn't a surprise. Regina King won. Not a surprise. Who won Best Score? Black Panther. That was another surprise of mine. I thought they were going to give it to If Beale Street?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to give it to
Beale. I heard a lot of people saying it should have been Beale Street.
I love the score for Beale Street. Loved it. But, hey, not gonna complain. Black Panther won. Okay. And then I think that's pretty much... it for me for biggest surprises, unless you have any.
No, because the most of the other stuff wasn't really a surprise. From best animated to best animated short, those were both locks. I was surprised, and this was what I was going to say with my snub, was I was surprised that First Man won best visual effects.
Yes.
The visual effects are really good. Like they do a very good job of blending CG with live action, and the majority of the effects in First Man are all real effects, but everyone seemed to be leaning towards Avengers or Ready Player One. So I was pleasantly surprised, and I felt like it was almost made up for it not winning best sound editing and sound mixing. So
yeah, I'd agree with that. Was a surprise. I'm not mad about it, but I thought it was gonna go to Avengers or Ready Player One. I have Ready Player One on my ballot when I was doing it. Oh, I forgot. There's another surprise I had. Spike Lee finally winning at Academy, not an honorary one.
I wasn't surprised. I knew he was definitely. It was between. It was gonna be between him and one of the other ones. I can't remember, but. I was glad he finally got one, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. It's about time he finally got one. It was surprising that they gave it to him for screenplay. So it was interesting. But other than that, I think that's it for me. Biggest takeaways also is going to be, we have another year where it's like you made a safe choice on the best picture.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you need to do a more daring approach to best picture again next year. But it's neither here or there. That's just my gripe.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. We still have got several more months ahead of us in 2019. We're just into March now, so 10 more months of movies, folks.
Yep, and on that note, that's where we're on our film of the night, Greta. Before I go into my nitpicks, because I definitely have a lot of nitpicks about this movie, Greta is a psychological thriller. Would you care to say it's released in 2018 or 2019? I was going to ask you that before I put it on my list.
2019.
Okay. Was out in TIFF last year. It's a film directed by Neil Jordan, starring Chloe and Schubert. Basically, Chloe plays Frances, who lost her mother a year ago and basically moved to New York with her best friend, I guess, finds a purse on the subway and basically goes and gives the purse back to this lady named Greta. They become friends, which, again, we're going to talk about. And once Chloe becomes more and more attached to Greta, the crazier and crazier Greta gets. Something happens, and basically Frances or Chloe decides that she wants to pull away. Greta says, huh, you wish you can do that, and that's where things start to go awry. Before I go on my soapbox, overall, what did you think of the movie?
I gave it a 3. I didn't think it was very well written. It had a lot of tropes from like 90s thrillers where you have this stalker who just won't go away. It starts out as friend and then they become crazy. Single white female comes to mind.
I was gonna say single white female.
The one that with Michael J-Lo Keaton movie.
Huh?
There was a film with Michael Keaton I can't think of, but that came out in the 90s with similar. I think the reason I gave it a 3 was mostly because of the cinematography, which is very well shot.
Yeah,
I agree. Then the acting from Isabelle Huppert.
Yeah.
Who was on, she was in my top, she actually won Best Foreign Oscar Actress for Elle,
right? Yeah.
Which was premiered at Fantastic Fest 2017. And that was a phenomenal film. Loved her in that. She was very, very good in this. Very intense. Kind of the way her character would transition from very sweet and innocent to crazy, like loopy. Like, she's kind of weird in the head. To like crazy menacing. Yes. She did that very well. Something similar could be said for Chloe Grace Moretz, who's not from the big city, so she's very trusting. Mm-hmm. And then as things start coming to light, her transition from kind of calm and cool to freaked out and that sort of thing was good. But for me, I really loved Micah Monroe. I haven't seen her in a long time. I felt like for a while she was going to start being in a lot of stuff after It Follows.
I was just about to say, the only thing I've seen is in Follows.
It Follows and The Guest. She like broke out during that Fantastic Fest and she hasn't really been in much since then, but I felt like those three were very strong. Dad didn't really do much for me.
No.
But the cinematography was shot very well. The scenes, the atmosphere was really cool. But again, it was just very by the numbers.
90s obsession movie.
Obsession thriller movie. Without those actors, it would have been a straight to VOD or DVD, whatever.
Or I would have told you to miss it. I gave it a 2.5. Now, I was going to say, the reason why it's not a 3 is because the more and more I thought about it, the more I'm like, yeah, this movie is not that great. It's really not. The only thing is, like you said, Chloe and Hubert, like, they're both phenomenal in it. Monroe, with the 20, 30 minutes she was in it, I was like, okay, she's doing a really good job, especially being a friend that's like, hey, yeah, this lady crazy.
Just so everybody knows, like, most of the stuff we're talking about is in the trailer.
Yes.
Because it is one of those films that I feel like if you like those kind of movies. You want to spoil it? I don't really want to spoil it. Because, I mean, everybody knows how most of these films turn out a certain way.
That's what I was going to say. No offense. I don't mind spoiling it. We're not going to spoil it just. I don't want to spoil it just yet. But I definitely want to talk about some story plots that pissed me off.
All right, we'll talk about some plot points, but not necessarily how they happen or what.
Correct.
But either way, I mean, nothing. Everything you see in the trailer basically happens in the first like 30 minutes, maybe more. But either way, you don't really see much of the second or third act in the trailers.
But they did a good job of not showing you that, which I was pretty thrilled about. So, yeah.
And like, I mean, I did like their interactions together early on,
mm-hmm.
and then just there are some scenes, and you see it in the trailer. But if you're one of those people who can get uncomfortable by public displays of like violence or outbursts,
or public displays of obsession,
yes, because there's some of that kind of uncomfortable scenes going on in there, mm-hmm. multiple times, and it is creepy. And I think that Isabelle is the reason that comes off, because it could come off as silly. If I were to just read it on paper, it would probably come off as silly.
Yeah.
But she plays it very, very phenomenal job as a creepy
lady.
And then the fact of what comes to light about who she is and where she's from, that makes her character even like a little more, you're kind of like, okay, she's definitely crazy now. Whereas at first you're just like, oh, she's a sweet, lonely old lady. And even when you find out the stuff, again, it's in the trailer, we find out she has put in these purses all over the place to get friends. And you're like, okay, she's just, you know, she's crazy, but she's lonely. Maybe she has good reason, but then
they go
her
into
past
more,
comes right. out. And then it's just batshit crazy.
And other than that, the setup, that's what I was just going to say. The setup for this film started very promising. Again, I thought it was going to be The Boy Next Door. That's that J-Lo movie I was thinking about. Why it took me so long to notice that. And Obsessed with Idris Elba. That's another movie that it reminds me of. You're sitting there and you're like, okay, the premise gives you some promising details. You're like, okay, it's going to be straight to the numbers, kind of like Obsession film, but at least I can go with it, in per se, saying like this might be a different take on it. And then you get some plot point happening, which we're going to talk about in a moment, because I really have a problem with how that happens. Everything just turns and goes completely left, like a by-the-numbers thriller. And I'm sitting there watching this. I'm just like, okay. 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 This is okay. Ooh, she does something cool. She does something creepy. Please have something. Oh, I don't get anything out of that. Okay. And then the climax happens. Well, not the climax. I would say the something big in the plot happens, and you're like, oh, that's what you've been doing. And they kind of allude to it, which doesn't make it that much better, but you're still wondering, oh, okay, this is what's going on. And then after that, I was so upset about how the latter 30 minutes of the film happened. I was so upset about it. And the ending, I feel like you could have done something with the ending, and it's just like, really? That's it? That's all you're going to do? Okay, fine, whatever. But I wasn't as mad as I was walking out of Solo. I was just like, okay, this movie is by the numbers Obsession film. Didn't do much. And then I started, like I said, started thinking about the plot holes, and I was like, oh, no. Yeah, sorry, I can't give this movie a 3. I was like, I got to give it a 2.5. So, before I jump into spoiler territory, you already talked about your pros and cons. Is there anything else that you want to talk about specifically before we jump into spoiler territory?
No, not really. I mean, like I said, if you didn't have those three actresses in it, it would have been probably a 1.5 or 2 for me, but yeah. I thought their performances were so strong that's the reason I gave it a 3.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. Now, we're going into spoiler territory because I want to ask Johnny and pick his brain about these plot points. So, you have your spoiler warning. If you want to watch Greta, pause this podcast and go watch Greta and then come back. But without further ado, here are the spoilers. I don't know about you, but to me, no offense, Chloe was the dumbest white girl in this film. I don't want to say she was.
Oh, no, she definitely was the dumbest, because the best friend was supposed to be the one who's like in the know, who's smart, who is able to get around things and figure stuff out, which comes to light at the end that she was the one who was smart and got shit done. And Chloe was this dumb girl who is plagued by the loss of her mom, so she's not from the city, so she doesn't know like in small towns or whatever where everyone knows everyone, you can trust people. In big cities, it's easy to get lost in the shuffle, and by lost in the shuffle I mean it's easy for a person who is not of sound mind to get lost in this giant city to where nobody realizes that there's a crazy person living next door to you, because there's so many people you see and interact with, so many people on a daily basis, it's easy to just get lost in that.
And I agree with that. And that's where I was just like, okay. And then I remembered, Chloe says she's from Boston. She says she's from Boston. And then you moved to New York because, you know, your loss of your mother a year ago. That's when I started going, well, if you're from Boston, I granted Boston is not as big as New York City. We are. I know that. Boston still can get, like, how Austin is, I would say. You know, it's a little busy, little congestion.
It would if you're in Boston. But, I mean, if you're from Taylor, you might say you're from Boston.
Okay. Okay, I see what you're saying. All right. And I was just like, all right. When she found out about the purses, so when she goes to Greta's house on that Saturday night instead of going to that party, and she goes through the cabinets to find the candles and finds all those other bags of all the other women.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I would have been like, yeah, no, I can't do this. I would have walked out, never talked to her again, blocked her number. And the thing is another tidbit. Like I said, when that moment happened, that's when the movie got off the rails for me. It was just like, okay, any normal person would have done this. So, yes, she did call the cops because she was standing outside of her apartment, mm-hmm. out of her job, right? And she's telling the cop, hey, she's been sitting out here, standing out here. And I'm just thinking in the back of my head, why haven't you shown the cop how she's been blowing your phone up? And she's been texting you and things like that. And my other thing is when she got, when she went to her job and sat there and was ordering food and she got arrested, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I would have done when she got arrested was the same cop that she's like, oh, yeah, I should just ride this out, right? I would have showed him, hey, he stalked my friend. She's been at my apartment. She has done this, this, and this. You don't need to release her. She needs to stay in prison. I mean, stay in jail until this happened. And I'm just sitting there wondering. Technology is a thing, people. This is not the 90s and early 2000s anymore.
It was written as if it was 90s outside of the stalking your friend by taking pictures and sending them to you.
Right.
And in the 90s, it would have been they take the pictures and then they mail them to you.
They mail them to you. Right. That's why I'm like, what? This is not 90s anymore, gentlemen. Like, just write the damn movie like it's in 2019 or 2018 like it's supposed to be. That's what bothered me so much. I'm just like, bro, this isn't the 90s. All of this could have been avoided if she just gave up the phone to her police. Like, literally, all of that could have been avoided. And then my other thing is the Monroe, no, again, she's the smart one out of it. And her dad, he's a dumbass dad, like a 90s dad. The thing is I guess they're not that great of friends, or they're not great in their father-daughter relationship. For if Greta was sending photos when she captures Francis, and she sends photos of each other like, hey, we're on vacation, then I'm just thinking, if I was your best friend like you said I was, wouldn't I have known, hey, you went snorkeling with your dad during this time, like, this kind of looks weird? Or, hey, my daughter and I did go to that. I mean, my daughter and her friend did go to this festival a couple of months back. Like, there's no point, you know? I don't know. It seemed like, again, I just felt like this was, hey, we made this script in the 90s, and then we just forgot that it's 2019 where technology is a thing, and we're just like, okay, the audience is going to forget that. No, I'm not going to forget that. Like, literally, all of this could have been avoided. I don't know. I was really upset about those two plot points. It really bothered me about it.
Yeah, I mean, it bugged me. And I was just like, it is what it is. Like I said, I knew within the first 30 minutes, I was like, okay, this is not a very well-written film. So I'm just going to go for the ride.
And see, I was going to say that, like, the first 30 minutes, right before Francis finds the purses, again, I felt like it was going to be promising. Yes, they had some very by-the-numbers moments like, hey, she's batshit crazy. You need to get away from her. No, I'm not. Well, you're trying to get a surrogate mother. How dare you? I was like, okay. I mean, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not mad about that. But it's just at that moment when Francis found the purses, I was just like, okay, this is going to batshit crazy. And I guess for me also, again, another plot hole that I had a problem with, and I'm going to say my last one after this. When Greta started talking about her daughter, what I would have done is research Greta. Literally, when she started talking about her daughter and you found out about all those purses, I literally did a Google search, Greta, found, oh, her daughter actually died years ago. Okay. Oh, that happened. Okay. Oh, this lady's batshit crazy. Hey, officers, here you go. Not only am I giving you my phone, here's all the records of this lady who's been stalking me. Take care of this. And I would have been done with it. What's the girl's name from Velvet Buzzsaw that does like a 2-minute exposition? When Francis calls Nicola's phone, Greta's daughter's phone, and her...
Oh, Zoe?
Yeah. Zoe literally, I feel like, was wasted in the movie. Literally for 2 minutes was like, she died years ago. She's never been to Paris. That's just the lore that Greta uses. I'd be like, yeah, can you say that one more time? Yeah, with the phone mic on. Can you say that one more time? She's been dead for how long? Okay, cool. Thank you. That and the ending.
See, the ending from the point where Chloe is captured until the ending, I liked because I was just like, okay, this is just stupid.
It was.
And I was just like... So I was just like, okay, let's get crazy. Like, it was like, I was thinking like Michael Keaton in Batman when he grabs the fire
poker. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
And I was like, okay, let's just see it get crazy. And then she fucking cookie cuttered her finger off. And I was like, okay,
we're getting somewhere.
And then when the private detective shows up, and then I was like, okay, what's she going to do to him? Because I know he's toast. And then as soon as they wouldn't show the face of the thing, I was like, oh, it's the roommate.
I was like, that's definitely the roommate. I don't know, bro. I was trying to go along for the ride. I was laughing, and a couple of guys who were like there. I wasn't by myself this time. I was at Mueller, Alamo Draft House. I was laughing at the private investigator because I was like, watch this dumbass get tranquilized or he gets jibbed with the milk. And literally what happens? She walks on her feet. Tick, and I'm like, oh, God damn it. All right, this is going to be dumb. And he's, oh, I'm drowsy, but I'm going to shoot you. I'm like, oh, we're going to play that fool.
And okay. Then they literally do like a silhouette of Chloe where each bullet hole is like, it's like an old Looney Tunes commercial where it's like and like the bullet holes perfectly make the shape of the person.
Yes, that's what I was like. So I was just, oh god,
yeah, I was laughing. It was good time.
But other than that, and then like I said, the ending, me personally, what I was bothered by was Monroe and Chloe are have her in the toy box. So what happens is if you do something that Greta doesn't like, or you do something that pisses her off, she throws you in the toy box. She throws you in this little toy treasure chest, locks you in there until you start acting right, right? And so Monroe and Chloe drug Greta, and then all of a sudden, puts her in a toy box after they, like, rescue Chloe and keep her in there, and then they throw the little Eiffel Tower inside the little lock mechanism. And this is when I was like, yep, this movie took the cake for the dumbest white girl's experience ever. Both of them are there, sitting in a chest, and they're like, it's over with. We're going to call the cops. Okay, hey, before we do that, you want to go grab some fresh air? Yeah. And so they go walk outside and go grab some fresh air, right? And at the end, Greta is slowly but surely pushing herself out of the toy chest. And you can see the Eiffel Tower is just deep. It's falling off and it's about to kick off, right? She needs about maybe 3 more pushes and the Eiffel Tower is going to come right off.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the cinematography for that point was amazing. Like, I love how he tightened the shot up as you're focusing on that. And it plays together. I was going to say that another thing I like is the prop design. Like, everything seemed like it had a purpose and it kept it going. So I love that about it. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, God damn it. If I was them, I'd be like, hey, we'll get some fresh air in a moment. Let's sit on this toy chest until the cops get here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just like, all right, okay. Y'all, if y'all get captured, you deserve it. You literally deserve it at this point. But yeah, that's my two cents about this movie. I was going along with it, and then when I started realizing all these plot holes, I was just like, yeah, this is a 90s movie filmed in 2019. We just forget that we have technology. I was just like, all right, I'm done.
Nope.
I'm done. So yeah, that's why the movie is a 2.5 out of 5 for me. I mean, I'd say wait for it on VOD. Wait for it to jump on Netflix.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. No, it's not a movie ticket.
No movie. Definitely not. Don't waste your time on this one. Go wait until it's on Netflix or something. I'd rather watch Babadook again for the upteenth time than watching Greta again. Like, yeah, you definitely can wait. Definitely can wait. Sorry, I hopped on my soapbox for a moment, but final thoughts, Johnny.
I mean, final thoughts, again, the acting was the one saving grace of this film.
Yes.
But, I mean, if you have to go watch an Isabelle Huppert film and you haven't seen Elle, just go watch Elle.
Yes.
It's a much better film.
Yes.
And other than that, I mean, yeah, the story's not great. Plot's not great. Acting is good.
Good.
Not really great. Good. I've seen all three of those actresses do better in other films.
Yes.
But once you, I mean, like I said, by like the middle to the end of the second act, I just shut my brain off. And yeah, got nuts.
I feel like I should have done that. I should have did, like you said, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. I'd be like, yep, let me drink some more Long Island's and let's take this movie for a ride. But other than that, yeah, that's our thoughts on Greta. On a lighter note, our next episode, Johnny will be hosting. We're going to be talking about Captain Marvel. We'll be watching Captain Marvel at the Alamo Draft House Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have our new episode up on the following Wednesday. So again, we're going to break up our schedule just a little bit. I'm excited. I don't know why. I feel really excited about this Captain Marvel movie. I want it to be not better than Wonder Woman, but up to par with Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I've been trying to stay away from like social media reactions and stuff. I've seen a few by accident, but I've been trying to keep away. I haven't gone looking for them. And yeah. I know the premiere was last night. Week.
Yeah, well, it was last night.
The Hollywood premiere. They had done some press screenings, some early screenings, but the actual like Hollywood premiere was last night.
Okay, yeah. So I'm going to stay away from social media. I'm going to stay away from reviews until we watch it, so I can have my own thoughts and opinions instead of grabbing from pieces from everybody else. But yeah, you'll hear our thoughts on Captain Marvel. And did you want to rank top like women's led superhero films also, or did you want to just leave that because there's probably not that many?
I don't even.
Yeah.
Yeah, there might be 5.
That's what I was going to say. There may be 4 or 5, so we'll leave that for another time. But, yeah, we'll talk about Captain Marvel. That's what we could do. You want to do theories after?
Yeah, we can do Endgame theories.
Yeah, I'm down for that. Down for that. So, yeah, we'll do Captain Marvel and Endgame theories. So, tune into our next episode that's on Wednesday. Johnny, where can the kids find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Johnny the Wonder.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Julian V. Owens. Thanks for joining us again on this lovely morning or whenever you're listening to this on the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. Listen to us on all channels. We are going to be on iHeartRadio next week. So Be ready for that. And other than that, thanks for joining us, guys, and see you too.
Later.